Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody. Hour number two of your Ben Jarofsky Show for Friday, December 20th. Forgot what month it was there for a minute. Friday, December 20th is just moments away. But before we get into this, we need to thank the following unions once again for sponsoring our program. First up, it's the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, sponsored this program, as well as the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. A giant thank you to those unions for jumping on board. And, of course, today's program is brought to you by our good friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. Hour number two, let's go. It is Friday, December 20th. And live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is The Ben Jarofsky Show. In this hour of the program, it's the return of author, professor, political know-it-all, pundit, and a really funny guy, David Ferris. And now your host, a movie junkie, political junkie, lover of the Chicago Bulls, and avocado and cheese sandwiches. Ooh. Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
David Ferris has quickly become one of our most popular guests. He's a Roosevelt University political science professor. He wrote, "It's time to fight dirty. Democrats, wake up. Stop being wimps and letting the Republicans roll over and take your lunch money." He's got a lot of provocative views on how the Democrats have allowed the Republicans to intimidate them. I happen to agree with them about 100% of the time, but many of my friends of the centrist persuasion disagree with him, and they've been coming on the show, and I always trot out David Ferris' ideas to them and hear, get the response, and now he's in the studio, so I'm going to trot out their responses to him. I get his thoughts, and then we'll get into impeachment, we'll get into last night's debate, all that good stuff that David Ferris junkies are waiting for. But before we do that, D, you got an update for me?
Absolutely, I do. People, before we roll out of here for the weekend, our host Ben Jarofsky will be weighing in on the latest Lincoln Yards update from Chicago Business Magazine. It's been his third favorite thing to gripe about in 2019, so you don't want to miss
it. What was my first favorite thing?
Well, now I know. In the last hour, I said that this was your second favorite thing to gripe about. The first being the location of the water fountains in the Sun-Times building, right by the women's bathroom. Every time Ben uses it, a woman walks out the bathroom and he looks like a weirdo. It's hilarious for anyone but Ben Jarofsky. But Ben, I forgot all about your second gripe.
Which was?
Yeah, it's all the anger that comes across your face anytime a person says something bad about Nancy Pelosi. He loves Nancy Pelosi, guys. By the way, Ben, has Nancy written back to any of your love letters that you sent to her?
No love from Nancy. I do love Nancy Pelosi.
One of these days, don't worry.
Oh, Babs is going to kill me, man.
She's busy right now. Maybe her New Year's resolution is to finally write you back. Okay. So, Lincoln Yards, now your third biggest gripe, all right? But people, you do not want to miss him riffing on it. But until then, like I said, we got David Ferris talking last night's debate and impeachment, and we have to read our latest new law coming in 2020. Yes, thanks to WTTW Chicago, we are now aware of at least 20 of the 250 new laws coming to Illinois. J.B. Pritzker, very busy guy in 2019. And all throughout the holiday season, it's our holiday segment special. We're going to be reading them. It's time for our latest new law. Let's find out what it is. We're calling it the 20 new laws of 2020.
That's correct.
Robert Mueller.
Got the sleigh bells.
Oh, okay.
It makes it festive, you know what I mean?
I feel very festive.
All right, the following comes from WTTW. This is a fantastic, I'm going to post this on our Facebook page, by the way, listing all of these laws. Let's see here. This law is about gender-neutral restrooms.
Oh.
Single-occupancy public restrooms can no longer indicate use by a specific gender. Instead, SB 556 requires that they are identified for all gender use and have a sign that says simply restroom. Making single occupancy restrooms gender neutral is inclusive, I can read, but it also just makes sense, said Senator Melinda Bush, the bill's chief sponsor, in a statement. She goes on to say that this measure will also help cut down on bathroom lines and just make life easier in general.
Yeah, I talked about this a little bit. I view the world, everybody knows this, of the older persuasion. So all this stuff is kind of new to me. And when I was visiting my daughters in California, they're way ahead of us in this, David Ferris. We were at a movie, and I went to use the washroom, and there was a sign that said urinals to the left and stalls to the right. I didn't know I'd never seen stuff like that. And when I went to the stall part to wash my hands, there were women and men, and I'm like, dang, I'm not in Kansas anymore.
Is there a water fountain by it?
There was a water fountain.
But was there a crisis? Was there like a social crisis in the bathroom?
Nothing. Yeah. But first of all, I was in California, David. So everybody's like, yo, man, that's how we go, okay? Yeah. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm in California too. I put my shades on. And so it's like, yeah, I'm with it. I'm cool. I'm down. So, old guy from Chicago, Midwest, I could deal with this. So, kudos to the state of Illinois for catching up with California on this thing.
Three down, 17 more to go. Okay. It's the 20 new laws of 2020, all this holiday season on the Ben Jarofsky Show.
All right, thank you very much. All right, David Ferris, and let's get down to business, as Bob Diver says. First of all, before I get to you some of the critiques that Ferrisisms have been receiving from my friends of the centrist persuasion, why don't you articulate some of the points you've been making throughout this year about why you think the Democrats should aggressively push impeachment and delay this as long as possible. Go ahead.
Sure. So there's a number of reasons why I think the Democrats should draw this out. One is that we keep learning new things about what the president has done. There may still be documents, tapes, witnesses, and just in the Ukraine issue that we may find out, in the coming months, more people may come forward with more information. So I think it's hasty to close it out. Second reason is it drives the president insane, okay, which is so entertaining. Yeah. I think he tweeted 125 times the other day, which is just like he's losing his mind, that impeachment is driving him completely crazy. And I think that there's actually real value in having the president himself only focused on impeachment, because it means he's not running an issues-based campaign. He's running a campaign of resentment and grievance against the Democrats for impeachment, okay? The third reason is that he's done so much impeachable stuff. And so I just feel like we should have hearings about what happened at the border, the child separation policy. That to me is just, that goes beyond a policy difference. And those are basically acts of genocide at the border. Okay. There's all the stuff with the Trump organization, the stuff with his charity. Like last week, this got drowned out by impeachment. He had to pay a $2 million settlement, the Trump charity, Trump Foundation. He's never allowed to run another charity in New York ever. Okay, drowned out, right?
That's because he was taking money that people were donating to his charity and spending in things not charitable.
Yeah, he was buying portraits of himself and just basic, gratuitous.
Do you think he should be impeached for that?
He could be, yeah. Why not, right? I think it's probably a weaker case than some of the others because it happened prior to his administration. I think probably we should mostly focus on things that happened while he's been in office.
Fair enough.
But the Trump Hotel, that's something that I think is an impeachable offense.
Talk about that.
He owns a hotel in D.C., Saudis are coming in and paying $500 a room a night in his hotel. It's enriching the Trump organization. He's doing the same thing with Mar-a-Lago where he's using his office to boost the power and prestige of his corporate holdings. And that's the bottom line. He may say, well, I'm donating some of that back to whatever, but it doesn't matter, right? What matters is the president of the United States has a series of corporate interests on the side that he's very clearly using his office to promote the brand of those entities.
Now,
and I just think that's outrageous.
Now, let's just pause for a moment and take those two points that you just raised. And I hope my friends of the centrist persuasion are listening. He quote unquote, these are my words, stole $2 million from his charity. People donated the money to the charity, so it would go to veterans, I want to say. He ended up using it for political purposes or buying a portrait, okay? And he had to pay it back, and now he's banned in New York from running a charity again. That's how bad it is. We're not going to let you run a charity again because you're a crook, yeah. All right? The second thing is he's got this hotel empire, and he's president of the United States, so people come to his hotel who are also going to be coming to him looking for policies, favors.
Yeah.
How's that not a bribe one way or the other? Just imagine, David, if that was a Democrat. How would Republicans be behaving?
Yeah.
How would, like...
Like if the Clinton Foundation had a hotel, you know? Like Hotel Clinton Foundation,
yeah.
You know, and they were like, all the Saudis and like Yemenis and Emiratis coming through, you know, paying $700 a night. Like, I'm sure that like Jason Chaffetz and Trey Gowdy would have just been like, oh, this is fine.
Yeah.
You know, this doesn't look bad at all.
Yeah. Two Republican congressmen is alluding to. Go ahead. Yeah.
So, you know, the final reason, I actually think the most important reason to draw this out, and this ties into what, you know, Pelosi may or may not be doing with the articles of impeachment, is that if you wrap up the impeachment inquiry, you pass the articles to Mitch McConnell, then you've handed control over the whole process, the staging of the process, the theatrics of the process, the rules and the procedures of the process, and you've handed it to like the master manipulator, the master proceduralist, Mitch McConnell, and Democrats. You are then sort of taken out of the equation of having control over the narrative that gets produced out of that trial.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, I wrote a piece about 4 or 5 months ago that said what Democrats should do is impeach the president like in October of 2020, and don't give Mitch McConnell enough time, or like the day before the election, you know, just like fly everybody back in, impeach him, and be like, you know, eat it, you know, like you're impeached. Let's have the election now. And I think that Pelosi may be sort of backing into that by making the claim that she has not sent the articles of impeachment to Mitch McConnell unless he can't hold the trial yet. I mean, I don't know. You can scour the Constitution, and there's no language that says the House has to, like, you know, physically deliver that. And it's not like the postmaster of the United States must deliver the articles of impeachment to the Senate. You know, there's nothing in there. Because,
yeah.
Again, and this is a point I've made 100 times on the show, is that the Constitution's extremely vague at very critical points like this, you know. But I think if they can make the argument that they have not sent, have not forwarded the articles of impeachment to the Senate, at worst, you'll end up in court as Republicans try to litigate starting the trial, right? Which is like what I'm hearing from the sort of McConnell Trump side, is that they're exploring their options to actually just hold the trial anyway, even though the House has not, you know, officially forwarded the articles of impeachment over to the Senate.
So wait, time out. All right, this is a delightful little aside that I hadn't considered. So, all right, right now the way there's articles of impeachment that have to be formally forwarded to the Senate so that the Senate can conduct its trial. And everybody out there, you know this, but just in case there's some who don't, the Senate's controlled by Republicans. The House is controlled by Democrats. This has been a totally partisan issue. Almost every Democrat voted for impeachment, with the exception of a couple, and the great profile and courage, Tulsi. I'm voting present.
I'm here.
Oh my God. Which way is the wind blowing? Oh, it's all confusing. Anyway.
Blowing always, apparently. I don't know what that vote was supposed to achieve.
Wow. Anyway, all right. So. And so the Senate's controlled by Republican Mitch McConnell, and all the Republicans have voted against impeachment, and they don't need to hear any evidence. They believe the president is innocent, and the Democrats are up to no good. All right, so there's no deadline as to when they have to formally send the articles of impeachment.
Well, the end of the Congress, right? So the articles of impeachment expire at the end of this congressional term.
So that would be
January of next year. So January 2021.
Oh, okay. 2021.
Right. Yeah. So you could just let him have, theoretically, you could just, McConnell.
He gets reelected. Boom.
Yeah.
You could send them
in like January 2nd.
That'd be cool. Think about that.
Yeah. No, that would be
great.
Think
about it. If he gets reelected and the Democrats take control of the Senate.
Yeah. I mean, then they control the trial, but they're still not going to get him unless there's a
60 Democrats.
Right. No, 67.
So,
We would need like a massive Democratic wave in the Senate, but Trump is reelected. It's not going to happen. Okay. It's a fun thought experiment, right? But it's definitely not going to happen.
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen. Yeah. But I think.
All right. So they have until the articles quote unquote expire as of January 2021. So you have all calendar 2020 to send them over. All right. And you're saying that Mitch McConnell may choose to have the trial even if they don't forward the impeachment to him. And what would Pelosi do? Go to court to block him from doing that?
I think it would actually be McConnell who has to go to court to hold the trial. But again, we're in a real constitutional gray area here, yeah, in the sense that, you know, McConnell could hold a trial in the Senate and nobody's going to stop him. Democrats could say this is not correct, and they wouldn't send their House managers over to be part of the trial. Ultimately some of this could come up. This may end up in the lap of John Roberts, who would be presiding over the trial, mm-hmm, anyway. And all this jockeying over, you know, can Democrats use the Senate trial to force like Mulvaney and Rick Perry to testify? Because Roberts might rule in their favor and say, you know, and compel these people to testify. But Republicans could also overrule John Roberts with a simple majority vote. And does he have 51 votes to overrule Robert? You know, so there's all this like...
Well, time out. Wouldn't these matters... I've been thinking about this. Wouldn't these matters be resolved beforehand? Follow me on this. So the Democrats could say, we are calling as a witness White House aides, Bolton, any of them.
Right.
And Trump will say, no, I'm not going to bring them. Wouldn't there be a lawsuit on that matter before they get to impeachment? Do you follow what I'm saying? Before they get to the actual trial? Couldn't that be litigated, thus dragging this thing out?
It could be litigated. I don't know how quickly it would be resolved, because before the Senate trial starts, Roberts is not actually presiding over anything, mm-hmm, until it starts. And so it would be like ordinary litigation that could take a long time to shake out. So I guess there's a lot of variables at play here. There's a lot of legal ambiguity. I have no idea what's going to happen over the next month or so. What I do know is if you think about how these Republicans would be handling this trial, the impeachment itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about all the things that are going to happen over the next year, that are like pageantry for President Trump, you know, the State of the Union, the Republican National Convention. These Republicans would be using impeachment to step on every single one of those moments with an impeachment hearing, or by passing another article of impeachment, right? Why not wait until the RNC, wait until the craziest person is on stage and impeach him that day? Impeach him again.
Yeah. You know? See, okay. I'm with you. You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah, but Democrats are afraid of their own shadows. You know, like they're like, well, Colin Peterson's going to lose if we do that. You know, Colin Peterson's in this like Trump plus 30 district in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know what? Probably Colin Peterson's going to lose anyway. So I don't really care about him.
Yeah.
But mostly the caucus, you know, I think there's these handful of members who really are out on a limb in heavily Trump districts where they, you know, they won on a fluke, and this happens every cycle. You know, a few people win, it's like, wow, I can't believe that person won. Like Kendra Horn in Oklahoma. Those people might be goners anyway. But most of the rest of the caucus is going to sink or swim based on the national environment and how popular or unpopular Donald Trump is and how Democrats are doing on the generic ballot.
Yeah.
So I think that, to me, I always wanted to see them pursue a strategy of making impeachment like a chronic illness for the president, mm-hmm, you know? Like, don't set aside a month where it's like nothing but impeachment. It's like, just have it open the whole time while you're doing other things.
Yeah.
I think that would afford them maximum leverage to interrupt the president's mojo on a variety of things, drive him crazy at key moments, and then you know, pass some articles of impeachment very close to the election.
Let's just pause for a moment, and I'm going to take a tangent within a tangent. I made a note to myself to come back, but you talk about vulnerable Democrats in quote-unquote swing districts that went Democrat in 2018, but will probably go back Republican. There's a good chance they go back Republican. We saw this happen in 2006. By 2010, the Republicans had taken back almost every district that the Democrats had won. The reason for that is that the maps are drawn in a way to, this is another David Ferris, we moved away from apportionment, the way we draw maps, or gerrymandered to favor Republicans. This is another sign of wimpy Democrats. You will find Democrats in the state of Illinois who will sign on to the Fair Map program, which would take away map drawing ability from Michael Madigan, who's the chairman of the Democratic Party. And they do it because it's fair. You will not find one Republican anywhere in the country, David Ferris, who's holding on to the power of drawing a map, who would willingly give it up. I do not understand the mindset of Democrats. It's like they think the game's legit. The game's not legit. The other side doesn't play by your rules. But no. We need fair maps in Illinois, Ben, because Michael Madigan has too much power. I'd rather have Michael Madigan have the power than Bruce Rauner, Democrats.
I mean, as long as we're in a world where we know that unfair maps are going to get drawn in 10 or 15 Republican states, I don't think Illinois Democrats are going to give up that power.
I mean, certainly hope so.
You know, I mean, I'm in favor of fair maps, obviously, right? But I mean, I'm in favor of a whole other set of reforms that would make this whole debate, you know, redundant anyway, which is, you know, ranked choice voting, and you have larger districts, and then suddenly there's no more gerrymandering, and we don't ever have to have this conversation again. Democrats are, I think that they operate constantly on a fear of what will happen to their 30 most vulnerable members, and Republicans operate constantly on what will please their primary voters, and they don't care about their 30 most vulnerable members at all. You know, and if you look at the last 20 years of history, which of those strategies has really paid off in the end? You know, and so I think Democrats do what you think is right, do what will make Trump's reelection the least likely possibility. You know, if you get polling data that says, you know, 70% of Americans want it all wrapped up, and if you keep doing it, they're going to vote for Republicans, like, okay, fine. I have not seen any data like that, right? I've not seen any data that suggests that the public is so repulsed by all of this that they just want it to be over, you know? In fact, I mean, and I've said this in like five columns this month.
Yeah.
50% of the country wants the president removed from office, right? And I think back to last night's debate. Remember when, I don't know who asked the question, but they were like, why, you know, they asked all the candidates, like, why don't more Americans favor impeachment?
No, it's
like,
the opening question. Yeah.
What would you do to make more Americans favor impeachment? And I'm like, flip that on its head, man. Like, why can't the president convince 50% of the country that he should not be removed from office?
Yeah.
Right. And so it's all about that framing, you know, like, and it's a way that Democrats are just afraid to say the sharpest thing. And it's like, I would love for somebody to have responded to that by saying, like, I actually think that a majority of the country thinking the president should be impeached is that's the number that we wanted.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's the number that says that the country has turned against you.
Well,
resign.
That's a good point about that opening question. I was really disappointed with the response to that opening question. And it seemed as though pretty much every Democrat on the stage, except I think Amy Klobuchar, I want to say it was her. Things are muddled in my mind. She gave a very lawyer-like, precise reason why Donald Trump should be removed from office for all the crimes that he did.
Mm-hmm.
But all the others were like evading it. They ducked and dodged it. It is though they bought in to the notion that Democrats, God, they let Trump lead them, David. Democrats look unfair by impeaching Donald Trump. And so Democrats are just bending over backwards to look as though, no, we're not partisan. You know, we're playing it by the book. And they got to be somber. And Nancy Pelosi, she wore the black. And the whole thing, you know, like, this is a very serious moment. It's not frivolous. Meanwhile, Trump is making a carnival out of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, meanwhile, Republicans in the House are like, you know, putting on a burlesque show about Ukraine and Burisma, and, you know, just ridiculous. They went in there like, and they were like, you know, they want the president to tweet at them praise, you know, like, Jim Jordan did a great job today. Good job, Jim Jordan. And that's like their motivation, is they want to make it look as ugly and ridiculous as possible.
So the governing principle of the Democrats, I think, is this, and let's see what your response is that all the David Ferris's and the Ben Jarofskys of the world who want Donald Trump impeached are going to vote for the Democrats regardless. What we're worried about are people in swing districts, and this is what my centrist friends come when they come in here, who aren't really paying attention, and they have a general attitude about the impeachment proceedings along the lines of, I don't understand why everybody just doesn't get along and get down business and do things for the country as opposed to playing partisan politics. And so their attitude is, we want this off the stage as soon as we can so we can concentrate on, which is, that's just so funny, healthcare. That's what's going to get us elected in this next election, because that worked in 2018. So what's your response to that?
I don't think you can run the same election twice, because particularly because Obamacare is not sort of under the same level of threat that it was in heading into the 2018 midterms. In other words, Democrats have the House, right? And so you have to make this very complicated argument about what would happen if Republicans took unified control of government in D.C., what would happen to Obamacare. And that's kind of the ground they fought on in 2016, and I don't think it worked very well.
Well, actually, the Obamacare is under a severe threat where there's the judicial rulings.
The Fifth Circuit, right?
Yeah.
But it's not going to end up on, I don't think the Supreme Court is going to rule on this before the election. I think that Roberts will still vote to uphold the ACA. But the real threat is like Republicans win again, Ginsburg dies, and then you have another vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act goes away, and then Republicans are free to unleash some Heritage Foundation plan for, like, you know, I got to shop around for my cardiologist or what, you know, whatever they think it is, like they're going to gamify it. Some stupid libertarian idea about what healthcare should be, you know, as if it's not libertarian enough out there.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a jungle out there.
Having just paid a $60 copay to have a doctor's visit, I just think it's actually a little bit of a tougher argument to make this time around, right? Because Democrats do have a share of power in D.C., healthcare is not really under threat today.
Yeah,
in a way that you can sort of rile people up, like this is what they're about to do to pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a little bit tougher of a needle to thread this time around.
Well, the other underlying assumption with my friends of the centrist persuasion, follow me on this. If as we go through impeachment and Donald Trump plays to the crowd, like the day they had the articles were approved, he had a rally in Michigan, mm-hmm. swing state, and he was all out Donald Trump, insane as he always is.
It's the only thing he enjoys about the job, I think. Just these rallies.
And tweeting.
It's like, yeah. It's like, you can do that without being president, by the way. Like, you don't have to be president. You can have these rallies all the time.
So that's like, oh my God, they fired up the base. Now they're fired up. See what we did, guys? We fired up the base. I'm like, well, one, Donald Trump can fire up his base fine. You know what I mean? He doesn't need you with impeachment. They're going to give. And secondly, you ever think that it fires up your base? Remember your base? You forget your base. You need
your base.
You have a base.
Yeah, yeah. We need them to turn out, too.
Need them to turn out. Democrats forget their base. They always take it for granted, David.
I mean, Republicans are going to find something to get outraged about before the election.
Yeah.
And the base is fired up. You know, like, evangelicals across the country are convinced that God chose Donald Trump to, you know, save them from the culture war or whatever. The people, you know, they're going to turn out. It's going to be a high turnout election. Might set some records. And so I don't think there's any sense in which we should be worried about, you know, giving the Republicans something to run on. Mm-hmm. If it's election eve, and Republican strategists are like, I just don't know how to fire people up. It's like Fox News will run a segment about, like, you know, the students at Oberlin or something. And then people will be like, oh, it's so outrageous. They declared Bon Me cultural appropriation. You know, like they're finding something to get angry about. They'll just go to a random campus somewhere in America and then look what the college Democrats are doing and they'll fire up 100 million people about it. You know? I mean, that's just the way it's going to work. So, again, I think proceeding on this from fear about what will fire up Trump's voters, I think is deeply mistaken. I think those centrists and your friends of the centrist persuasion, as you call them, would probably be like, well, the Kavanaugh hearings really, really fired up Republicans, and then they held those Senate seats. And it's like, I don't think so. You know, I don't think there's a lot of data that suggests the Kavanaugh hearings had any effect at all. I think the polls showed a majority of Americans opposed his appointment to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it helped in the House, and I don't think it really hurt in the Senate.
Well, the other concern, again, of my friends of the centrist persuasion is that there are swing voters who aren't really paying attention, and are turned off by partisan politics. I, have a hard time saying this argument with a straight face, because the Republican Party has been a partisan machine for since the 90s, when they went after Bill Clinton. And we had fun yesterday. We had a lot of fun with this. Your favorite columnist, John Cass of the Chicago Tribune.
Worst columnist in America.
A friend of mine sent me this column he wrote in 98 when it was Clinton. Uh-huh. And it was unbelievable. We read it on the air. How you have no choice, America, but to impeach this man. What are you going to tell your children about this guy, you know, these women that he mistreated and his lying? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Here we are.
I know.
20 years later, and he's saying the exact opposite. It's a political. So Republicans have no problem, David, saying one thing one day and the next thing the next day and being totally partisan. And yet Democrats live in fear of looking too partisan. Please explain that to me. I don't get that.
I don't really get it either. I mean, one great example is, you know, during the Merrick Garland stuff, Mitch McConnell like invented a rule yeah. about how you can't fill Supreme Court seats during an election year. And then last, you know, I think it was earlier this year, somebody was like, so if Ginsburg dies in 2020, are you going to, you know, what are you going to do? And he's like, we're going to fill the seat.
Yeah.
Like, of course we're going to fill the seat, right? I was lying to you. Yeah. You friggin' dummies. Like, are you kidding? You didn't know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Republicans are like a bit more comfortable being totally shameless about that stuff. I mean, you know, you can go back to the Clinton impeachment and find some clips of Democrats saying some things that don't hold out that well in terms of what they're saying today is with the people that are still in Congress. So it's not like Republicans have the whole field cornered on hypocrisy. I think that what they really have the field cornered on is just being as ruthless as they possibly yes. can in every situation, and using all the powers that are at their disposal to get what they want. And just one example of this that I really wanted to talk about on the show today.
Go ahead.
Democrats just passed a $738 billion defense bill that created a space force during the impeachment inquiry.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's like, what? I just want to pull them aside. And I love them. You know, this comes from love. I just want to pull them aside. Yeah. And just be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Did you extract anything from the president about this? Do you remember how spending bills used to go during the Obama administration after the Republicans took the House? Every time we agreed on a spending bill, it was like a national crisis that we took to like midnight before violated the debt ceiling or we ran out of money or we shut the government down, and Republicans were able to extract things.
Yes.
From Obama.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody liked it, but nobody likes Congress anyway, so who cares? you know, Congress has had the same like Stalin-esque approval rating for 15 years.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever going to, like, that's what I want to tell the House too. It's like, no one is ever going to love you. You know, like, no one will ever love the House of Representatives. Oh, yeah. They will always hate you. Yeah. You might as well lean into it and be hateful and get what you want. Like, yeah. Get what you want. What did we get out of that? Why did we create a space force for the president? Because all the president, and it, we get nothing back for that. It's not like the president went on Twitter and was like, I want to thank Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer for everything they did to pass this bill. It's yeah. great to see bipartisanship come back to Washington. I look forward to working with them again. He was like, you know, gotcha, suckers.
Yeah.
I got my space force, right? And he's right back to like the rallies and crying Chuck. And
because I'll explain it and get your reaction. And this gets back to the Democratic psyche. Democrats in this particular issue are afraid of looking weak on defense. Yeah. And so they'll always bend over to accommodate Republicans, and they'll treat people, lefties in the party, as though they're alien creatures, which is how the center of the Democratic Party treats someone like Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. Because the lesson they learned in 72 is that they can never be left of the center. That's the Bill Clinton lesson. He imparted it to Rahm Emanuel, who imparted it to David Axelrod. I don't know. Maybe they learned it together, and Barack Obama picked up on it, too. And that's the governing principle of the Democrats. And so they look like total hypocrites. You're absolutely correct. And here's Donald Trump comes in, and he just throws out the window. I kind of give him credit for this. Just all the trappings of like the protocol of he totally reversed his policy in Syria, pulling, you know, those troops out to help Turkey invade. And he didn't care. Can you imagine if a Democrat did that?
Oh, my God.
John McCain, Lindsey Graham screaming at him, you know. So Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think Americans really care that much about foreign policy unless there's some active crisis that touches us, you know, like a security crisis that we can feel or that we think affects our families. People mostly don't care. And I don't think there's like really that much polling to suggest that people want to spend $738 billion a year on defense. Like, I actually think Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are on the right side of the public opinion about defense in that sense. So of course, if we cut the defense budget, we're going to be pilloried. I'm having this like sudden memory of like the late 90s. And remember when the emails used to, you know, you used to forward, 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 forward.
Yeah.
And it was like a list of like, you know, all the programs that Clinton had cut out of the military budget or something. And nobody cared, right? Nobody cares. Except the people that work on those programs, I guess, but like nobody cares. And so I think it's just so puzzling to me.
Well,
the party won't make a stand on this, or at least extract something from the president in return.
No, they won't, and that's conventional wisdom. And I generally praise Nancy Pelosi, but you know, she's as guilty of this as anyone. And it's the prevailing wisdom of the Democratic Party, the lesson they learned from 72. And I think it was you. Somebody had a great wisecrack about the 70. You may be the only one, because it was about George McGovern, and the Republicans made fun of George McGovern, the three A's, acid, amnesty, and abortion. Mm-hmm. Was it you who said this?
No, I don't know.
Well, anyway, that's how Republicans made fun of George McGovern. They wanted to present him as a complete alien that was so far removed from America. So they did acid, because he was like, they were all tripped out and smoking reefer. Right. Amnesty, which meant, people, draft dodgers in Canada could come home. And abortion, they were for abortion rights. I got news for you. It sounds like pretty winning issues.
I know, yeah. The public opinion is very much on the side of all three of those things at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, 1972 was so long ago. It was like 47 years ago. I mean, are we really still scared of the national security Republicans at this point, 47
yes.
years later?
Apparently we are. Yeah. All right. So I think that was pretty convincing. So by the way, I think Nancy Pelosi is actually drinking the David Ferris Kool-Aid. I think she's starting to realize that they're going to be scammed if they just turn this over to Mitch. You're absolutely correct. And so she's thinking, hey, I'm not going to play into your hand. So you know how things go, David. This could drag on all year.
Could drag on all summer, yeah. I mean, you know, what I'll say about Nancy Pelosi is I really disagree with the way that she's handled, like, budget negotiations in mm-hmm. particular, in the sense that I don't think she's played hardball enough. On the other hand, every time Trump has tried to roll her, he has come to ruin. And they are trying to roll the Democrats on the Senate trial. And they've been too open about it, you know, like when Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham were like, yeah, we're not going to have a fair trial. Like, I already made up my mind. Like, yeah. He's innocent. You know, yeah. I guess we'll do it. And like, we'll do the, and they're like, you know, like evil person, air quotes, like we'll do the trial. Right. And it's like, yeah. You're not supposed to say that out loud, dummies. Like, what are you doing? And so I think that got back to Pelosi and the Democrats. And I think it got to Chuck Schumer, and they were like, well, this isn't going to work. Right. Because they're just going to acquit him in 5 minutes and all this will have been for nothing.
Yeah.
On the other hand, just to play devil's advocate for a second.
Oh, okay.
I think that they want some of these people to testify, right? They want Mulvaney to testify. They want Perry to testify. Somebody important that I'm forgetting. Anyway, Bolton, right.
Yeah.
Bolton's a real wild card. I mean, I don't know what they think that Mulvaney is going to do on the stand other than lie. You know, like, I don't think Mulvaney's not going to get on the stand and have like a Jack Nicholson moment from a few good bits.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, you ordered the aid held up, didn't you? Didn't you? It's
like, you can't handle the truth.
Right. Deep down in places you don't want to think about at night. You know, yeah. You need me to hold up that aid. Like, it's not going to be like that. He's just going to go up there and lie.
Yeah.
You know, so if Democrats.
Well, he's lying under oath. He's facing perjury.
Has that stopped?
Okay, you're right. Valid point.
Like, has that stopped Sit anyone corrected. In the Trump?
Yeah.
They all lied under oath like a million times. So I'm a little bit worried from a strategic perspective. The Democrats are holding out for this thing in the Senate trial, and they'll get it, and it will be very anticlimactic.
No, that's, you know, that was the same thing with the Mueller report.
Yeah.
I mean, and so it never disturbs Republicans. I don't know if I sent you this article. I've been sending it around to a lot of people come on the show, not just centrist persuasion, but a lot of people. And I always screw up the guy's first name. I remember it was James or Jim. Stewart is his last name. And he writes for the New York Times. He covers legal affairs. And he wrote a very astute analysis about the way Republicans play the game of congressional investigation, comparing it to Democrats. Mm-hmm. And he talked about the nonstop Benghazi investigations and basically came to the conclusion that it was through those nonstop Benghazi investigations that they stumbled upon the fact that Hillary Clinton was using a server that was not her official office server. They played that led to Comey. And so, in other words, if you're going to be ruthless, and you're up against ruthless people, you got to play it like them.
You got to be ruthless.
Yeah, so we don't know. You're right. If it's going to backfire or it, ultimately, I don't even
try.
Know.
You,
right.
And did Benghazi, did those hearings ever hurt the Republicans?
No.
No.
There's no evidence that it hurt the Republicans
and
at all.
I think if you took a poll, people would have been like, stop doing this. You know, if like, do you approve of these hearings? People are like, yeah, probably not. But like, ultimately, when it came to election day, you know, partisanship in the economy were way more important than
just think about how Democrats,
hearings.
By and large, reacted. They played along with it.
Hillary Clinton testified for 12 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys are just like, you know what, I'm not going to, you know, you can hold the hearing, but it'll just be like, and I'll just be an empty chair. You can ask, like Clint Eastwood at the RNC. You know,
yeah.
You can ask the empty chair a bunch of questions if you want, but I won't be there.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas Democrats were like, what time? So I'm late. Oh my God. What time do I have to be at the committee hearing to obey the subpoena? You know,
yeah.
It's just, we're just like in different universes here.
And you know? Totally different.
And voters do not care. About defying subpoenas.
So what do you think will be the governing right now? I know it's really early. We're almost a year out from the November election. But what do you think, if you had to say right now, make a prediction, the governing issues that would be deciding, that would be turning that election, the decisive issues in, it doesn't even matter who the Democratic nominee is. Let's say it's Bernie or Biden, you know, the extremes, you know, in the party. What do you think the governing issues will be?
I mean, the same as they always are, honestly. I mean, it's going to be about economy. It's going to be about healthcare. I think Democrats are going to make it about sort of Trumpian corruption throughout the whole administration. I suspect the president will want to turn us back to immigration, you know, expect the return of some caravans to your televisions very soon, I'm sure. So I think that the president wants to remember the caravans. Always, they always appear at the most strategic moments on Fox News.
Yes,
they're like, there's a caravan. What are we going to do? it's like 100 defenseless people. Like, what are you afraid of? I think the president will try to play up sort of cultural war issues. I think that there's some things that might come out that we can't foresee at the moment. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know how the Supreme Court is going to rule on some abortion things prior to the election. So that could be a big issue. I don't, you know, knock on whatever wood you need, but something could happen on the Supreme Court. You know, like Ginsburg is not well.
Yeah.
Right. And so we may have a vacancy to fill, or we may have just filled a vacancy on the Supreme Court. That could be a big issue in the election. There could be a foreign policy crisis between now and then. But I think at the end of the day, I think we're going to be, Trump is going to be like unemployment, the stock market. Democrats are going to have to talk about inequality and poverty and sort of like the struggles of the middle class and convince people that they have a better vision of how the economy should work than the president does. I don't know if that's like a very entertaining answer.
I do believe that Donald Trump as a personality and a character will be a very important issue. And I think Americans will have to confront that. That whether they want this person to continue to be their leader. And that's why I took notes on what you were saying. And number two, and your reasons why they should drag these impeachment hearings out, it drives the president crazy. Mm-hmm. And I think the president feels that's political genius on his part, and he thinks he's really smart.
I don't think that's true at all. I think it alienates independence, and he needs independence. I mean, if we're talking about the kind of people that legitimately change their minds from election to election, A, they're probably not paying attention yet. B, they generally do lean towards one party or the other, right? So it's hard to pick them off. But I just think that those are the kinds of people who are inclined to think like, yeah, you know, things are okay economically, you know, 401k is up, but just dude can't shut up.
Yeah.
You know, I can't deal with it.
I can't deal with it anymore.
You know, versus also, I think Democrats have to be careful not to sort of like shame people who might switch their votes. I mean, I think there's also a subset of people who voted for Trump and who, you know, I think could be persuaded not to vote for him, but they don't want to be told necessarily that like they were bad people for voting for him. You know, I'm not saying you should premise the whole strategy on that. I'm just saying that I think that there's a subset that's sensitive to that kind of thing.
All right. Now I'm looking at the clock. I know you have to be somewhere real soon. So real quickly, we don't have a lot of time, but and by the way, I just want to remind everybody, Samina Mustafa and Letitia Wallace will be on the show taking a deep dive in a little while. We're gonna end the regular show and come back to a bonus feature about the debates.
At about 4 o'clock on the YouTube live stream, Chad, yeah. So make sure to join us.
David, yeah, you watched the debates. Just your general thoughts.
They were so long.
I fell asleep.
Yeah. I'm like, consider the children. Jesus. Like, consider people with young children. Like, I got to go to bed. I have a baby that's going to wake up in 6 hours. Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah. Again, it's the last, this debate and the last debate, I think have sort of the misfortune of being overshadowed by impeachment. So mm-hmm. I think they're not going to get as much, I don't think anybody's going to get as much traction as they might have otherwise gotten had this happened earlier in the process. I thought the clear sort of runaway winner of last night's debate was Amy Klobuchar. She's funny, yeah. You know? I can't tell you how seldomly any of these people like legitimately make me laugh. You know, in a, like, I actually think you're funny kind of way.
Yang makes me laugh.
Yeah, definitely.
He's got a deadpan funny. Sense yeah. of humor.
He's like, sometimes when we're left alone, men are morons. Like, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
No, you know what? His great liner, if you saw the whole thing at the end with the close-up, the closing statements, and he goes, I know you're looking at me right now and wondering, how is this guy still on stage with these guys? That was a great line.
It was. He's funny.
Yeah. So, Klobuchar.
But I thought Klobuchar had a really great night. She had, I think, the first or the second most speaking time. Which is pretty, you know, I was surprised to see mm-hmm. that. She was funny. She stuck it to Buttigieg. I thought she gave some interesting substantive answers on things like trade in China that were, I think, thoughtful without necessarily alienating any part of the Democratic coalition. Mm-hmm. Pete's in her way, and she and Pete got into it. It was very entertaining. I really thought she got the better of those exchanges. And, you know, I'm inclined to dislike anything that comes out of Pete Buttigieg's mouth because I find him super annoying.
Yeah.
And I don't find her, like, she's, I actually ask my lefty friends this sometimes because I'm like Sanders and Warren all day long before any of these people. But if it had to be, if it came down to Biden, Buttigieg, and Klobuchar,
okay,
you know, who do you want?
Yeah.
And for me, that's just the easiest answer in the world, and that's Klobuchar.
Yeah.
I think she's, you know, she's got better experience than Buttigieg, more experience. She's more thoughtful. And as opposed to Biden, she can complete a sentence. You know, although I will say Biden had his most coherent debate last night.
I've said this on the show many times. I do not believe that's a liability in politics to be incoherent. I've said that people in the city of Chicago, I like to point this out, have elected Mayor Richard M. Daley year after year or election after election, and the man was incapable of completing a sentence. So incoherence is not a liability in politics, and coherence is way overrated. Amy Klobuchar, one of the themes that she comes back to, I've seen every debate, and she hammers it every single time. I want your thoughts about this. Is that she says, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm from the Midwest, so she's always accentuating that she's not from the, you know, she's in the flyover country, mm-hmm. territory, whatever they call it. I know how to get Republicans to vote for me. I know how to get swing voters to vote for me. I'm electable, and I'm from the Midwest. Repeat, repeat, yeah. repeat. Everybody has their repeat phrases. I understand that. What's your reaction to that?
You know, a little bit. Reminded me, I was at drinks one night a few years ago with somebody who went to Harvard Law, and they told me they went to Harvard Law like 25 times during the course of the conversation. And I was talking to my wife, and I was like, where did she go to law school again? I can't remember. Was it Harvard Law?
Yeah.
So she, you know, Midwest is the new Southern Democrat, like, you know, the way it was in the 90s, where we thought that somebody on the ticket had to be from the South or we couldn't win. I'm not sure that that's true, but I do think that she has a pretty good track record of appealing to rural Minnesotans, right? Whether that translates to the national stage, I have no idea, because there's very few head-to-heads nationally with Klobuchar and Trump. There was one head-to-head in Minnesota, and she did way better than the other candidates, right? Which is not surprising. You get that home state advantage. I do think she kind of has the right mix of, like, you know, folksiness and down to earth, without having that whatever the mystical quality that alienates men when women speak.
Yeah.
You know? So she's somehow sort of threaded the needle on avoiding some of these sexist attacks that have been thrown that Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris in particular, I think, she also hasn't gotten a lot of scrutiny.
I was going to say,
So, you know, all these hit pieces, it would be ironic to me if the sort of the Jacobin left, you know, successfully took out Kamala Harris only to see another prosecutor get the nomination because they didn't see her coming.
Yeah.
But I would expect if she does get a bump out of last night, which I think she might get a little one, particularly in Iowa, I think we're going to start to see some pieces about who she is, because I've read 1,000 pieces about Kamala Harris's past as a prosecutor and Buttigieg's time as a mayor, Warren's past as a, you know, doing the side work for corporations. But like, I don't actually know that much about Amy Klobuchar. I was like reading up on my way over here. She was like Hennepin County attorney, and then she was the senator. And I don't, you know, do you know anything about her time as a state attorney?
No.
I have no idea. Right. So, I think she's going to get, if she does get a little boost in the polls, like she's also going to get her turn in the barrel, just like anybody else did. So, but in terms of substantively what happened last night, I always like to think of these, because I come in with my own prejudices, you know, and I'm inclined to like what Warren and Sanders have to say substantively.
Yeah.
But if I knew nothing about these people, you know, like you're behind John Rawls's veil of ignorance and you walk into the debate, you know, and you're like, here are seven strangers telling you about why they want to be president. You've never heard of anything, about any of them. I would have come away with a very favorable impression of Amy Klobuchar. And I think that could really help her. I think she'll be around. I think she's going to serve. I think that she might survive Iowa to fight on past that. Whether she's viable past that, I have no idea. Probably not. But more so, you know, I think she ended the night in a better place than she started. And I can't really say that about anybody else on the debate last night.
Yang is a
niche candidate, okay? In the sense that he's running on basically one issue, which is the universal basic income.
Mm-hmm.
He's a character. He's hard to place ideologically.
Yeah.
He says things that are like totally out of left field. But it makes you think. He's the kind of candidate who says things and you're like, I gotta Google that. Like, what's a thorium reactor?
Yeah.
You know, like, what's that?
I know. No, you're right. Yeah. He's like, so smart.
What's up with the facial recognition technology in Hong Kong? You know, like, what's up with that? Is somebody watching me? Like, so he's interesting. Like, I'd love to sit down with Andrew Yang and be like, so tell me. But he also, you know, sometimes he's charming. Sometimes he also comes off as like, if the lead character from HBO's Silicon Valley ran for president,
it would be him.
He's a little bit of a derp, you know. Like he's like I don't know. He's goofy. He's definitely goofy. So there was a time where I was like, please get this guy out of my face, and now I'm kind of like, okay, you can stay for one more debate.
He's gonna be right.
You can be in the January debate, but once you get 5% in Iowa, you gotta go away.
By the way, I really gotta let you go. Yeah. So we even mentioned Bloomberg and his role. That's for the next year. When is the next debate?
Sometime in January, right, before Iowa.
You can rest assured, folks, we'll get David Ferris back for the, probably link it to the next debate or the next impeachment hearing, whatever. So, David, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I know
great
you had to get
here.
Going. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come in with Miles' review of Star Wars, and then we're going to close down the show.
Then we have the Lincoln Yard story.
Oh, the Lincoln Yard story.
Pal.
I cannot forget the Lincoln.
Oh, you did.
all that marijuana in the 70s. We'll be right back.
It's Chicagoland's adult entertainment playground. It's the world-famous Admiral Theater, 3940 West Lawrence Avenue. The Admiral is homegrown from Chicago, and it's the most conveniently located club in all of the city, 15 minutes from the O'Hare Airport in downtown Chicago Loop. Voted Chicago's best strip club, the Admiral has showgirls galore and a variety of adult entertainment shows. The world-famous Admiral Theater, open every day from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m., 3940 West Lawrence Avenue. For events, showtime, and other information, visit AdmiralX.com. Must be 18 years of age or older to enter.
Hey, commercial break's over, everybody. Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show. Mr. Jarofsky, take us to the weekend.
Will do. We're gonna have our review. We sent our very own Miles Porter out to watch the Star Wars movie last night. We didn't send him. He went on his own. And then what else we got, D? What else we got?
This I is think you know.
Lincoln Yards.
There you go.
All right. I don't know exactly what D has up his sleeve, but we're going to do a little Lincoln Yards thing.
Too much honesty. All right, everybody. Now, remember, at 4 o'clock, we're going to be jumping back on YouTube for the live stream, and we're going to be talking all things last night's debate with our good friend Samina Mustafa and Rockford's own Letitia Wallace. They're very smart people, very learned individuals, and they have a lot to say about the debate. So this is going to be available for a bonus interview as well that you could download at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites. But since the debate was last night, the more we go on here, the older the news gets. So we want to get it tonight. So on the live stream, 4 o'clock, join us, won't you?
All right, very good. All right, Miles, we sent you there, but I don't think you had to be sent by anyone.
And Miles, the editor of the program.
Didn't I already say that?
Just to make sure.
Okay. Mr. Radio School there is always leading me down. All right, so Miles, talk about it. Was it a midnight screening?
It was a 10-10 screening. 10-10 screening, and I went with Malachi, my best friend Malachi from back home, for those who don't know. Went with him and a bunch of his family members, and we saw the movie, and we came out thoroughly surprised.
By the way, young Malachi was an outstanding track star at Evanston High School back in the day. Just had to say that.
Yeah, still running track, too.
One of the fastest kids out of Evanston High School in the last few years. All right, yeah. So was it packed?
No, it was not packed. It was not backed. I think one of the issues coming into this movie is that The Last Jedi was, for the most part, was a letdown to a lot of Star Wars fans. So coming into this movie, the expectations was very, very low. So the anticipation wasn't there as much as it should have been, in my opinion.
And you've seen every single Star Wars. You realize Star Wars began before you were born, way before you were born.
Yeah, I am a junkie. Books, comics, shows, games, everything.
First time you saw Star Wars, when did you first become aware of it?
I was like 4 years old. 4 years old.
How'd you become aware of it?
My dad just popped in the little VCR tape. Surprisingly, I remember that, and I just see the crawl come down, and that's how I fell in love with it. I was 4 years old.
You know, junkie's one way of saying it, but we got another way of saying it where I'm from. Nerd.
Yeah. Proud nerd. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There we go.
Proud nerd.
All right.
It took me a while. It took me a while to really just come out with that, but now, I'm a proud Star Wars.
Now, Miles, was this something you kept from your friends when you were growing up because you didn't want to look uncool?
No. Okay. Everyone who knows me very well knows that it's baseball and Star Wars. Like, you got to respect those around me or it's just not going to work out with.
Somehow or other, basketball has inched into it as well, because Miles was with us last night for the Bulls talk.
Basketball
has worked its way into. But all right, so at a very early age, you were converted to Star Wars.
Yeah.
So you went back and watched all the movies that came out before you were born. And then when a movie would come out, you would usually go with your dad, right?
I'll be there with my dad.
You're gonna see it again?
Yeah, I'm going to see it again. I think we're going to see it again on Monday.
All right. Yeah. So... I saw I have a confession to make. Miles, please don't hold this against me. I saw the first Star Wars when it came out on a screen. That's how old I am. And I thought, I was like, it's not bad. Then I saw the second one. I was like, I've seen enough Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I waited another 30 years. I saw another Star Wars. I go, now I know why I don't go see them, because I don't really like them. So it's confession time.
Yeah, yeah.
So explain to the non-Star Wars people of the world why Star Wars is so good.
It is such a cohesive experience. Really, just the adventure of the characters when it comes to a character like Luke Skywalker, Anakin Skywalker, at this point, Rey, these are stories that people can relate to. These are things that people like me identify with when it comes to being from nothing and then being a big hero and being a leader. There's something for everyone within these stories, and there's thousands of characters that someone can just identify with, and the stories are very emotional. They're very fun, funny, sad, everything. It's a whole experience that you really don't forget, and it resonates with certain people.
And so when there's those moments in Star Wars movies where the planes, the jets are shooting,
yeah,
and that's where I kind of like trail off. You get into that?
I love it. I love it. I'm such a big nerd. I know the names of all the ships and everything. You know, it's kind of embarrassing. I know my teammates are going to be listening to this. They're going to give me a hard time, but it's okay. It's okay. This is something that I just grew up with and I fall in love with, and it's just great to me. I know everything and everything going on and the little details.
All right, so now the only way I'll see this Star Wars is because my wife, who doesn't share your love for Star Wars, but she keeps talking about Baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda.
And she wants to see Baby Yoda. Yeah. So what is Baby Yoda?
So Baby Yoda is a character who we think is a clone at this point in The Mandalorian, which is the show it comes from. It is a smaller version of the older Yoda. So think of regular Yoda, the old guy, kind of like the old hermit, but this is the baby version of him, and he's a very, very essential piece in the Mandalorian, which is out on Disney Plus, which people should go watch.
Wow, man, see this stuff. You might as well be speaking French because I don't understand any of this. This is a really dumb question, but you know, you can't be afraid to ask dumb questions, Dave. Radio school.
I love it.
So is Baby Yoda the younger version of Old Man Yoda?
That's what we think right now. That has not been officially confirmed yet, but there's been hints that that is the case.
Or it could just be two Yodas.
It could be two Yodas. I highly doubt it, but I think that is the Baby Yoda, or his species is just like very force sensitive.
All right, now, is this supposedly the last Star Wars movie that they're going to make, bring out? Is that correct?
No.
There's more coming out?
This is the end of like the Darth Vader, Skywalker era, Anakin, all that. This is the last of that story.
But then there's going to be new ones coming out.
There's going to be new ones, Disney's own story. They've been ready to kind of branch off and do their own thing. It's been a very rough ride with Disney and Star Wars fans. Very rough ride. Just the fans are not resonating with the new characters, with the new stories.
It seems like just the first three Star Wars, that's it. Every other movie after those first original three, no one likes.
Wait, that's not true. He likes them.
Well, I mean, you know, you got your nerds who will kind of like it no matter what.
Wait, I got news for you. It's huge. Lots of people like it. It sells millions and millions of dollars worth of tickets. Yeah. I mean, I take a look at the...
Well, it seems like everyone always has a gripe with any of the newer ones that come out.
It is tough to be anyone who is working with this content. So whatever they did, whatever they put out, you are going to have a group of fans who are going to be mad no matter what you do. So I came to that movie a little bit, you know, more lighthearted. I was angry with The Last Jedi. I did not hate it, the last movie. I did not hate it, but I did go into this movie, you know, a little bit more calm. I expected too much out of what they had. And if you go in there with low expectations, you're going to be very satisfied with this current.
Lower the expectations.
Yeah.
You're going to see it again.
And don't be so hard on them. Star Wars fans are hard. They're hard. They're hard fans. Man. I think they're the hardest fan base to please.
Well, actually, I don't know. I would think my left of center Democrats are pretty hard to please. Don't say anything nice about Nancy Pelosi. I don't know who's harder to please. My brothers and sisters on the left are Star Wars fans.
All right,
fans.
Miles, so. How many stars are you giving this Star Wars movie?
Out of five?
Out of five.
Out of five, I'll give it 3.5 as of right now.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Dang, that's not that great.
You're going to go see it a second time. What will it be after the second time?
I'm hoping we get up to a 4.
All right, the third time?
Hopefully a 4.5.
The fourth, he's a nerd.
There is no 5 out of 5 for this movie for me.
By the way, Miles, Dad, and I will be going to see Uncut Gems together. We've already cut that deal, and that's the one I'm really looking forward to. Adam Sandler and Kevin Garnett.
I
can't wait to see this movie. It's coming out in the week. It's coming out right after Christmas, so I'm going to go see it with Miles' dad. He's a fellow Adam Sandler fan. All right, Miles, great job on the review of Star Wars. Dennis, what's this Lincoln Yards thing you got?
And Miles, what makes you feel any better? I am a pro wrestling nerd, so everybody has their own little nerdy thing. All
right? Yeah, exactly.
All right, here we go. It's time for Ben Jarofsky's for the final time of the year. It's time for him to weigh in on his fourth favorite thing to gripe about in 2019.
I thought it was my second favorite thing.
I know what you're thinking. Dennis, earlier you said it was his third favorite thing.
Third,
and the hour before that, you said it was his second. What gives, bro?
Yeah.
Well, silly me. I forgot about that other thing you love griping about all year. This guy.
Take a chill pill, man.
Well, it's related to Lincoln Yards.
I don't think you'll ever get tired of griping about former Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
But I do not hate him.
Well,
let's get that clear.
We learned that last week.
Ramana Hussein, I do not hate him.
So, after further review, Lincoln Yards is now your fourth biggest gripe.
So, what's number one?
Number one being the location of the water fountains in the Sun-Times building. It's right by the women's bathroom, and every time Ben uses it, a woman walks out of the bathroom and he looks like a weirdo. Number two, anytime a person says something bad, anything bad about Nancy Pelosi, guys, he really likes Nancy Pelosi. Yeah. And no, she hasn't written back to any of Ben's love letters. Number three, this guy.
Take a chill pill, man.
And finally, number four, Lincoln Yards. Ben, before we read the update, remind everyone again of your beef with a soon-to-be-developed Lincoln Yards.
Well, I may have lost a job over this one, D. So here we go. You want me to lose another job. Lincoln Yards is a project on the north side of Chicago in an area that's rapidly gentrifying, and the city of Chicago, in its infinite wisdom, decided that they were going to take $1.3 billion, that's billion with a B, of your property tax dollars and subsidize the development of a upscale project in an area, as I already said, that's gentrifying. So they're giving money to developers to make it to develop a development that would develop anyway, if that makes sense. And they're doing this while they say there's no money for nurses in the schools, no money for mental health clinics in poor neighborhoods, high crime areas. So Lincoln Yards is just sort of the symbol of everything that's out of whack with the way we do things in the city of Chicago. And then we pretend as though there's abundance of money when it comes to funding things like Lincoln Yards. But when it comes to funding nurses, we have no money.
An impression of anyone in particular? Just want to make sure.
It's just everybody.
Okay.
So anyway, so I could go on and on, but that's the gist of it.
All right, so let's read our update here. The following comes from Chicago Business Magazine. And no, not Ben's fifth favorite thing to gripe about, writer Greg Hines.
I love Greg Hines. Great poker player.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. This comes from a person named A.D., initials A.D. Quigg. That's a cool name.
Yeah, it is cool.
Very mysterious. All right, the mayor. Okay, this is the article here from Chicago Business Magazine. The mayor argues that she's making good on her promise that big developments in Chicago, including Lincoln Yards and the 78. Ben, real quick, what's the 78?
78 is very similar plan to develop undeveloped area just south of Roosevelt Road at roughly Clark Street.
The mayor argues that she's making good on her promise that big developments in Chicago, including Lincoln Yards and the 78, quote, will be met with robust and inclusive community engagement processes. After bruising political battles over the use of city funds for private development, Mayor Lori Lightfoot, aldermen, and development officials have agreed to launch new community advisory councils to steer construction of Lincoln Yards and the 78. In separate statements announcing the councils, the mayor said she was delivering on her promise that big development projects, quote, will be met with robust and inclusive community engagement processes. The 14-member Lincoln Yard Advisory Council, quote, will ensure the project creates affordable housing, makes 21st-century transit-oriented improvements, and connects our city's residents to shared resources, Mayor Lightfoot said in a release. While the 17-member 78 Council will, quote, provide guidance, identify improvements, and maximize economic opportunities for the community and the city at large as design and construction gets underway. The two projects, valued at a total of $13 billion.
Yes, that's billion with a B.
With a combined 115 acres of planned development, stirred protest and divided votes at the city council and were a target of the Chicago Teachers Union during its recent strike over the city's, quote, misplaced priorities for city spending. Each will benefit from hundreds of millions in tax increment financing. Oh boy, that's Ben's word there. Otherwise known as TIF, revenues for infrastructure investments.
Yeah, it's property tax dollars, folks. It's your property tax dollars are going to those projects. So when they say they're benefiting from TIF funding, it's property tax dollars. That's the money you pay in property taxes. How many times should I say that for the people in the city of Chicago? By the way, so she named these commissions, these committees that are going to oversee this. Was I on any of those committees?
Wait, let me look. No.
Can you imagine they put me on a committee like that? I don't think there's anybody remotely resembling me on a committee like that in worldview. So, listen, man, this is like, what's that old saying, D? You know, you're from downstate. This is like a downstate saying. What? It's like closing the gate after the horse has already run out of the barn or whatever.
Never say that.
This is one of like that. Oh, now you guys are going to do something about this? Should have done this stuff before you gave them the money. By the way, they talk about economic development. This and that. You know that like $25 million is going to Lincoln Yards lawyers? You know that, D? Where was the negotiators on that? Can they pay for their own lawyers? We have to pay for their lawyers. Don't get me started on this thing. This is what my request in the new year is from this committee for Lincoln Yards, whoever's on this committee. Find out how much the Lincoln Yards project is adding to our property tax bill. Do you think you could do that, guys? I know they should have done that before you approved the deal. All right. When it comes to, by the way, this is all pet peeve. You shouldn't have thrown this at me at the end of the day, at the end of the week.
Oh, we're going out with the bang, buddy.
All right. Follow me on this one, folks. When the teachers go on strike and say they want more money dedicated to something like a nurse or a social worker, you know, or a psychologist, you know, or more teachers, so there's lower class size, really, like, things that would help people in the city of Chicago. Well, all the little, you know, number crunchers go, oh, well, let me just figure that out. And all of a sudden, immediately they have, like, some number added to your price. Well, that'll cost you, the average property taxpayer in the city of Chicago, $100. Did you know that? And then you like, all these...
Is that an impression of anybody in particular?
That's just the general, my radio impression. Okay. So when I'm in their car, I'm like, well, you know, we just did... We have Billy Bob from the Federation of Concerned Taxpayers.
Oh, sound a little bit like Mr. Bike, just saying.
I love Mr. Bike.
That's correct.
Mr. Bike, man, that show... off the charts last week with Mr. Bike and the council analysis. But anyway, but when it comes to Lincoln Yards, they never even discuss it. They never figure. Nobody ever figures out what the cost is to the average taxpayer when you give all that money to, oh, it's a baffling issue. I don't know. Well, it's not much, Ben. That's what they say. It's not much, Ben. Oh, well, thank you for that learned and very specific response. Ben, it's hardly anything at all. What are you worried about, huh? Quit griping, all right? Get over it. But meanwhile, when you want to hire a nurse, we carry the one, we add the three. Yo, it's going to cost exactly $159. They're so smart and wise to the T when it comes to figuring out how much extra you're going to pay for property taxes for something you want, like a nurse in a school. But when it comes to a handout to an enormous developer who doesn't need it to an area that's already gentrifying, hey, it's baffling. I don't know how much. It's just beyond my comprehension to figure it out. But it's not much, Ben. I know this. It's not much.
I was right the first time. That is your top thing to gripe about.
Dude, you shouldn't throw me that thing at the end of the day. I was all fired up after David Ferris, man. He was telling it like it is. Democrats, wake up.
So, hey, there you are. The latest on Lincoln Yards. I told you he loves griping about it.
I'm mad because I didn't get on the committee. All right? I should be on the committee,
man. Oh, wait. Look, I was online. Let me look here. I found what committee you're on. Hold on a second. Let me surf through. Oh, there it is. The Weirdo Bulls Lover Committee.
Yeah, it's me and about one other person. Anyway.
Joe Cowley.
The great Joe Cowley, man. A Sun-Times Bulls beat writer and a good friend of this show. All right, D, is that it? You got any more things you're going to throw at me at the end of the show?
I think that's it.
All right. I want to thank all
of you. Wait, hold on. No, that's it.
All right. David Ferret.
Yeah, that's it. I'm just kidding. Okay. Sorry.
One more time?
No, we're done.
That's a radio school joke, folks. All right. I want to thank our great guests, David Ferris, Ramana Hussein, Miles Porter, and, of course, the man.
Wow, that was smooth. Hey,
Miles, I don't want to give away secrets, so we're not going to give away secrets, but Miles drove today.
Yeah.
And Miles' dad out there, Cap, my beloved friend, one of my best friends in the whole world, Mr. Lazy. Miles and I have made a, what is it called for the New Year's? A resolution.
Yeah.
And we are going to get Mr. Porter, Daddy Porter, off his butt in the year 2020.
Oh, yeah.
Miles walked, it's about a mile walk, isn't it?
From nice, too. It's
a nice walk. Nothing wrong with it.
Loved it.
I love it, too, man. Dr. D loves it, too.
It's about 2 miles.
Well, no, it's not 2 miles.
Oh, it feels like it.
What are you, Keith Porter?
Well, that's my favorite.
Laziest cat, man. Keith Porter, when we go to a football game and I park at the outside the chicken place, Betty, this is too far.
No, I can't walk there. No, I can't do it. No, you got to get closer.
You got to get an Uber to get to the... Come on, Cap. So that's my resolution, all right? Cap's going to get in shape in 2020, and we're going to go walking together.
Gotcha, Pops.
I want to thank absolutely everyone, and, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, the pride and joy of Alton, Illinois. Back home in Alton, they call him White Lightning. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. See you on Tuesday, everybody.
Name's Dennis. And remember, you can download previous Ben Jarofsky shows and Benny J bonus interviews at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and wherever else you download your favorite podcast. Downloaders, we live stream this program. It's true. Tell your friends. Tuesdays through Fridays, 1 until 3 p.m. Central Time at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and the Chicago Sun-Times YouTube channel. Check it out sometimes. Join the live stream chat and give our new contrarian friend, PC Amnesty, someone to argue with, won't you? Thanks for joining us, PC Amnesty. Check out the Benny J. Bonus interviews this weekend as well. Downloadable, Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Reader websites. It's not available on YouTube. You got to go find it. Subscribe, like, share, review. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, at Benny J. Show. We'll see you Tuesday.